intermission.
No, it's halftime.
McDaniel will end it in style. Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won the first ever national championship.
Still missing your free throws, Wes? Who cares? They don't show free throws in SportsCenter.
Here's Washington on the drive.
I don't know if he'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing ball.
And they do it in stunning fashion over the number two team in the country.
Fact is, I missed a shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
You got to give the Razorbacks credit for a comeback, forcing overtime in a game that it looked like was about to get away from them. But as we will say quite often, there ain't no moral victories when you're actually looking at a final score and the win or the loss, or in some cases the tie, though not in basketball, will go on your record. And it does go down as another defeat for Arkansas basketball. 94-88 against the LSU Tigers. I think it's a pretty good-looking LSU team that Will Wade has put together. No matter how he has put it together, they do look very entertaining, a very good ball club. But disappointing outcome for Arkansas. And for me, the thing that I'm starting to get worried about is that they're beginning to lose games in different ways. If you saw it this past week, Arkansas defended well against a limited offensive attack in the Florida Gators, but the Hogs just could not score enough. And obviously the big thing against the Gators was not getting the ball to Daniel Gafford, if at all, only taking four shots. That wasn't the issue for Arkansas against LSU on Saturday. In fact, Gafford had maybe his best offensive game ever. I don't know what his numbers were at El Dorado High School, but 32 points in 37 minutes, extremely efficient when they got him the ball, making 14 of 19 shots. A good amount of those were dunks, but he also displayed some nice moves and touch around the rim. But aside from Gafford and Mason Jones, Arkansas not really getting the three-point production that they need, certainly not from Isaiah Joe, who's slump continues into a second game. And while Arkansas did look good offensively and had a great plan, still couldn't hit those free throws and just could not stop LSU from knocking down shot after shot after shot. The Tigers made nearly 52% of their field goal attempts. That included 60% in the first half when they built their 8-point lead. Naz Reid, I mean, how many 6'10" players, 6'11" players are going to be knocking down three-pointers? But then again, he didn't have anybody around him when he got the ball around the three-point arc. Hit four of them in four tries. Mike Anderson did admit that they didn't expect him to go 4-for-4. I don't think anybody would expect him to go 4-for-4. When you look at the problems from Saturday, it was defending the three, and it was just overall defense at times. And another disappointing outcome. Ty, you've heard me say, and in the SEC, you're going to expect a lot of close games. I mean, all three games Arkansas's played in the SEC have been close to the very end. You beat Texas A&M on the road by 2, lose to Florida by 6, a game that was not decided until the final 10 seconds. LSU obviously goes to overtime, so seeing a lot of close ball games. And you've also heard me say that when you begin to lose close games, sooner or later, that's what you're becoming. It is still mid-January, so there's a lot of time for Arkansas to improve and make some of those plays near the end of games that they need to make, or maybe make plays or shots early in the game to where those last 2-3 minutes don't matter quite as much. But when you see them lose two games in this last week, both of them at home, obviously that's the most disappointing part, because four losses at home already ties the most in one season under Mike Anderson. You still have more than a handful left at the bud. They also lost these games in different ways, and it wasn't the same problem that plagued them both ball games. When you looked at the loss against LSU on Saturday, what was the most disappointing part of it for you?
It had to be free throws. Once again, Mike Anderson addressed it.
Talk about the game's going to be come down to the little things, and it came down to the little things again. And I think the little things are execution, offensively and defensively.
Now, Phil, you can put some things on Mike Anderson, but when this team is 322nd in college basketball and free throw percentage, goes 61% from the game, you can't put that on Mike Anderson. And once again, free throws killed this basketball team. You would think that they would understand the value of making these shots, how important it is to practice these, during practice, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, and I would imagine there's nobody on that team that doesn't realize the importance of making those free throws. And I also know that there's no way that they don't practice free throws. That's something every basketball team does time and time again. Maybe a little bit of an emphasis, more emphasis on it in some practices than others. But I mean, they definitely practice free throws. It isn't coming out in ball games. 17 of 28, 60.7%. Mason Jones knocking down 8 of 9. Daniel Gafford, 4 of 9. That's going to be a problem for Gafford. He missed a couple of free throws late when he had a chance to take the lead. And free throws hurting them. They're ranked in the they're actually one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. Now 322nd in the nation. And aren't there about 360, 61 schools, yeah, Division I basketball?
Not too far off. And the good thing is Daniel Gafford actually addressed what was wrong. And I like when players come out and say, that's on me. And he did that on Saturday night.
I would say the main thing, we got to lock down home, play defense. And another thing is to hit free throws. For instance, I mean, I missed 2 big free throws today. We got to make sure we hit free throws, especially on the home court, because that's what is, we got to protect this place. I mean, they can't just come in bud and just do whatever they want to. It's not called one of the hardest places to play in for nothing.
Losses, 4 of them at home, tied for the most losses in Mike Anderson's tenure here at Arkansas. You just don't expect them to lose games like this at home. Western Kentucky, LSU, Florida. I mean, these are games that you just don't expect them to lose, even if it's against better competition in the Southeastern Conference, but you just expect them to find ways to win because that's what they've done in years past. Frankly, with less talent, Phil, like you have a lottery pick on this team. There were some early years in Mike Anderson's tenure where there was not a lot of talent on the basketball team. And while this talent is young, Daniel Gafford being the premier player, is he even just a sophomore? You really have Adrian Bailey is really the only veteran on this basketball team. You just got to find a way to win these games at home. No one's going to critique you. No one's going to blast you. No one's going to put you on blast as much if you lose these games on the road. But when you keep losing these close games in Bud Walton Arena, then the people are going to come out of the woodwork. Then the people are going to come out and criticize the basketball team more because you just don't expect to lose at home, Phil.
Well, and you got what you needed out of Gafford, and you've gotten what you've needed out of Mason Jones in the past 2 games. But where is the rest of the backcourt scoring? Isaiah Joe has had back-to-back subpar performances, and that's the crazy thing is that he didn't even shoot the ball in the first half. Only took I'm gonna look at my box score so I get it correct here. Only tried 1 3-pointer for the entire ball game. So obviously there's an issue with confidence there now for Joe. He didn't seem shy about chucking it up when he went through a slump earlier in the season. And what's the only way for a shooter to get through a slump?
Shoot.
And hey, I know that, you know, we might sound complaining about Isaiah not taking enough shots. Last game, we're complaining about Daniel Gafford not getting enough touches and not getting enough shots. So, I mean, really, when this is part of the issue about losing games in different ways. But that also tells you that Isaiah can get hot at the right time, hopefully. And maybe you end up with an upset of a team that you don't expect to defeat, which, by the way, would be tomorrow against a very good Tennessee team. If you're going to talk about Arkansas right now being a young team and utilize that as I'm not saying this as an excuse. I don't mean this as an excuse. It's just a fact. It could be a reason why at times they don't look quite as fluid offensively, have a little trouble communicating defensively, and now you're going to go into Tennessee facing a team that's been together really for the last 3-4 years. And I mean, they're experience laden. They've got seniors on that club that are really having great seasons. Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield. I got to be nervous about what's going to happen tomorrow at Thompson Bowling Arena. We've seen some tight ball games. Hopefully tomorrow's not the sort of game that gets out of hand, because Tennessee is just blowing teams out left and right.
Yeah, and Anderson talked about on Saturday night, like, he got asked, hey, you're now going to the toughest place to play in the SEC as of this year because of how dominant Tennessee's been. He said it's about finding a way.
No, I don't like losing. I don't like losing, period. Now, home, away, it don't matter. I don't. And so we've got me and my staff and our players, we'll find a way. We're going to find a way. We always do. Our teams, again, will continue to get better. It's just like I said in December. It'll be different in January. Well, I think in February you'll see a different team.
Phil, Tennessee has lost one game all year long, and it was a close overtime to Kansas, 6-point loss. I believe Grant Williams fouled out in that game. They had a chance to win if he had not fouled out. And so this team is going to absolutely clobber Arkansas tomorrow night. Like, I don't think there's any question about that. And this could not come at a worse time for Arkansas, coming off back-to-back home losses. Even though you were able to win on the road against Texas A&M, you're downtrodden, you're in the dumps because you just lost two games at home. And first time in, I believe, 2 years that they've lost a Saturday home game. They had like 14 straight. I think it's the stat that 14 straight that they've won. So this just inopportune time to play the Tennessee Volunteers and a senior-laden team, guys like Grant Williams, guys like Admiral Schofield. I mean, they're just going to clobber Arkansas tomorrow night.
Well, you're gonna need to find a way to get Isaiah out of his slump. You're going to need more from Desi Sills off the bench. Desi was such a big part of the win at Texas A&M with 14 points off the bench. Hasn't scored a point in these back-to-back losses. And what's happened with Jalen Harris, who was so good taking care of the ball, even coming into the A&M, right? We get A&M 9 assists, no turnovers. Last two games, both losses, 8 turnovers against 9 assists. And I don't even think, I mean, I say this tongue-in-cheek, did Jalen Harris even commit 8 turnovers until the new year? And I'm being honest about that because for a while, I mean, he went a couple of games without any. 3 other games in a row where he committed 1. So I think you're also seeing the effect of now you're in conference play. Now it's big boy basketball, and the SEC is as good as advertised. I think LSU is maybe a little better than we expected. The Florida Gators, yeah, you come into Bud Walton Arena in a down year and come out with a win, and now you go to Tennessee tomorrow, and then at the most surprising team in the SEC this year, the Ole Miss Rebels on Saturday. Ole Miss now ranked after defeating Mississippi State. That's back-to-back wins against top 25 teams for Kermit Davis. And I know that with the success that Kermit's having at Ole Miss, and that's something we'll get into later on in the second hour, is kind of a bit of the damning evidence of what the disappointment that I know fans are feeling in year 8 under Mike Anderson. Now, I said this on Friday or Thursday last week. I know the way that college basketball fans and college football fans let their frustration out when it comes to social media and sports radio.
You're saying people aren't cordial on those things, Phil?
It's not a matter of cordialness or how you speak to people. It's a matter of what the topic is. And you can already start to hear a little bit of the rumblings about people looking back in Mike's tenure, 8 years, wondering, you know, where's the success in the NCAA tournament? Are you even going to make it to the NCAA tournament? The rumblings are starting to begin. They're not going to come from this show. It's January 14th, and there are still a lot more games on the roster. Now, I'm a little nervous of the way that Mike, in the post-game comments after Saturday's game, you can hear from him exactly what we know about Mike's teams. They always get better in February, but it's almost like he's just sort of, I don't know if he's hoping or just expecting it'll happen because it's always happened. And by the way, you still have 2 more weeks left in January, and you're going to need a few wins in January before the team, you know, all of a sudden blossoms into whatever you think they'll be in February. So let's not plan for February. Just the same idea as let's not plan for March, when we're doing a post-mortem of the season, however far they go, and then the questions start to come. And again, they won't come from this host, but I know they'll come maybe from the other host and from other parts of the show and from callers and from tweeters. That's when the discussion about Mike Anderson's future with Arkansas basketball really starts to take hold. It's when you look back at the season that is finished and wonder where you're moving forward in the future. Not right now. What I'm worried about now in the future is what is this next week going to look like, where you're going on the road playing 2 teams, one of them that is better than expected in Tennessee. I don't know if anybody expected they would be. I mean, I'm seeing Gary Parrish on CBS Sports has them ranked first in the country. And I think the part of the evidence is how they've demolished the SEC teams they've played, and they're getting production from everybody they need production from. And then against Ole Miss, which is the opposite in a successful way for Tennessee, a team that was picked dead last in the conference by the coaches and the media. And all of a sudden now they're ranked. And nobody really knows why Mississippi has turned into a very good ball club with very much the same players getting time in Andy Kennedy's last year that are getting the time in Kermit Davis's first year.
Kermit Davis is a pretty good coach. He did some work at Middle Tennessee State. You remember they beat Michigan State, I believe, twice in the NCAA tournament. But I'm kind of with you. You're surprised that he's able to expand on this success so quickly. And, again, let's mention it's early on in SEC play that can take a downward spiral. We don't know what's going to happen. You mentioned that with Mike Anderson, kind of calling me out a little bit, Phil, acting like I'd be calling for Mike Anderson's job. I am not going to do that because I think that'd be very stupid at this point in his tenure. Number one, because the season's not over. You're three games into conference play. You cannot come out definitively and say, this guy should be let go, this guy, we need to move on from him, blah, blah. That's just stupid. And even though I'm a millennial, 24 years old, I'm not that stupid to come out and say that. Number two, there are reasons as an Arkansas fan you can be mad at Mike Anderson. Let's go down the list right now of the coaches in the SEC, just real quick. Tennessee, Rick Barnes, this team looks like it has the potential to make the Final Four. We'll see what happens. They lost last year to, I believe, they lost to Loyola to Chicago, who went on to the Final Four. So we'll see if it translates to success. We'll see what Kermit David does at Ole Miss. LSU, Will Wade, looks like they got things kicking in year two. South Carolina, Frank Martin, been to a Final Four. Kentucky, John Cal, top of the league. Bruce Pearl, he's got pretty successful tenure there at Auburn. Don't know about Avery Johnson at Bama yet. Florida, Mike White, Elite Eight. Georgia, Tom Crean, we'll see. Billy Kennedy at Texas A&M. I think they've been to a Sweet 16. Again, the stat is every single program outside of Arkansas has been to a Sweet 16 since, was it, 96? So every single one. And it might even be since Mike Anderson started. Don't hold me to that. And then Missouri, don't know. And then Vanderbilt, they lost.
The last time Missouri was in the Sweet 16, it was with Mike Anderson coaching them.
Yeah. And then Darius Garland, they lost him for the year. We'll see what happens with Bryce Drew. So that you have reason to gripe, but my thing is, like, just let it play out. And even if the season doesn't go as planned, and even if you don't get to the NCAA tournament, there has been success. But it's the postseason success that hasn't been there that gets people rowdy, because the SEC success has been there, Phil. It has been there. There are numerous stats you can look at the last couple years that Arkansas is either second, third of the pack in the SEC, but it has not translated to postseason success yet. Their lack thereof, no Sweet 16. And I know they played some good teams getting to that point. We also talked about the slow starts. I can't remember a time in Mike Anderson Sr. where they've just come out of the gate running in an SEC play. It seems like they always start slow, even with talented teams, and that hurts them in the bidding process once the NCAA tournament rolls around, because they don't get a higher seed. They have to play higher seeds, better talent, before they can get to a Sweet 16. So, no, even though I'm a dumb millennial at 24 years old, I'm not going to be calling for Mike Anderson's job anytime soon. If you think he should be let go, I'd really like to hear your case, 877-377-6963. We're never going to silence you on your opinions on here unless you just start spewing racist or sexist venom, stuff like that. But, like, give me a definitive reason why Mike Anderson. I don't think you can find a definitive reason to let him go at this point. I just don't.
I think the main issue that fans have is something you brought up, which is the lack of postseason success. And part of it isn't even Mike's fault. It isn't Mike Anderson's fault that they didn't get to the tournament under John Pelfrey and go deep. It isn't his fault that Stan Heath only took them so far. And, you know, I know Mike was an assistant in the, you know, under Nolan Richardson, but he can really just be responsible as a head coach for what he's done as a head coach. How long has it been? Has it been 24 years?
90, was that, is 96 that the streak? Was the last time they went to the Sweet 16.
22 years. Mm-hmm. So Mike Anderson is responsible for 8 of those seasons. And I know the frustration builds up. It does build up for fans, especially when you still view yourself and in some ways reason to feel that you should be annually a program that at least has an opportunity to go to the Sweet 16 and feel that you really belong there. And I think the program is on, for the most part, solid footing. It is difficult to keep the talent that you need around year after year. I think you see that with all of the lack of a senior and all the freshmen that are getting playing time and transfers that have had to come in the last couple of years. It's such a complex discussion. You know, and Mike does everything the right way. There's never been any recruiting issues as far as improprieties. It's such a complex issue. That's one of the reasons, aside from the fact that, you know, I mean, I'm kind of attached to the athletic department up there in Fayetteville, that at this point of the season, it's a ridiculous question to bring up, but I do hear it on other shows and on Twitter, and really you react to what has happened right in front of you. But then again, you know, after this week, you go at Tennessee, at Ole Miss, then the following week, home against Missouri, then you got to go at to Texas Tech. So, I mean, really, three of the next four games are going to be really tough to win. And I know the frustration, maybe by the end of the month, maybe reaching a crescendo. But if you are like a Mike Anderson team, you know that they're going to get better in February. Well, maybe they will, maybe they won't. This is not an average club, I think, that we've seen over the tenure here at Arkansas because of all the inexperience and time that they haven't played together. And I think that that's playing itself out. It's playing itself out. We expected a roller coaster. We're getting a roller coaster in the sense that team looked great in November and in December, and a couple of those wins were big wins. When you talk about the way they played against Indiana, I think that stood for itself. But now that you're in conference, it's a different ball club, not defending as well, not able to score as much, and it does lead to disappointing losses, including the last two ball games.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
Beard ahead to Gafford. How about a windmill? Let's put a little exclamation point on it. The Hogs are moving on.
Marcus is on 55 North. Marcus, where are you on the freeway and how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you guys taking my call. I'm over here in the vast nothingness between Marion and Jonesboro. So
that is vast.
If you lose my signal, you know exactly what happened. I drove off into the vast nothingness this year. I'll try to be quick here. Ty, you kind of called me out, man. You were calling for, you want to know why you've got to make a change at coaching staff. And this is my opinion, and let me preface a couple things first, okay?
Hey, Marcus,
first off,
Marcus, real quick, can I clarify my argument?
Yeah.
I said right now. That's what I said. That was my definitive argument, was right now.
Okay, so you're talking mid-season fire.
Correct.
Okay, well then, you and I are on the same page. You can't do it mid-season.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you why it needs to be done at the end of the season. This team is not going to make the NCAA tournament. It's not, barring some miracle, it's not going to happen. And so that will be that'll be twice in the last 4 years of an 8-year tenure that you've got Arkansas not making the NCAA tournament. In my opinion, that's unacceptable. Now, I'm willing to admit Mike has brought this program out of some very dark times that the previous coaching staff got us into, but this is just not working out, guys. We've not sniffed a Sweet 16 in the 8 seasons that Mike has been here. You know, we have no conference titles. We've had failures on the recruiting front. Nobody wanted Mike to succeed more than I did, okay? I'm old enough to remember the glory days when Mike was here under Nolan, and when the hire was made, I was all in. I thought, this is what it's going to take to fix it. He knows the recipe. He can fix it. And he's done some good things, but it's just not working out. I mean, in 8 years' time, I would expect at least one trip beyond the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, no conference titles? I mean, come on, man. We got to get something. We got to have something to hang our hat on. Honestly, I see no signs of it getting any better because everybody had talked about this 2018 class, The class is good. The class is very good. Daniel Gafford is arguably, you know, he's got an opportunity to be the second SEC player of the year that Mike has had in the last, 4 years between Bobby Portis and Daniel Gafford. And what's he going to have to show for it? He's going to have some regular season wins, but he's going to have no conference titles. He's going to have, you know, Gafford is probably going to go 1-for-2 on making the NCAA tournament, much less winning a game. I mean, it's just, I wanted it to work out. Mike's an Arkansas guy, but we got to face the facts. It's just not working.
Marcus,
that's my take, man.
Okay. Now, and I you put out some good points. Two things I want to say. 2015, okay. you run into a buzzsaw in Kentucky. That's one of the best Kentucky teams, even though they didn't win a national championship of all time. You played in two conference championships, 2017 and 2015. You also have gotten close to a Sweet 16. You're a play or two away from beating the eventual national champion in 2017. And I know that they did not play down the stretch well in that game, but you had a shot of beating North Carolina. You also had a chance to beat them in 2015. Now, that game wasn't as close. I was actually in attendance for that game. But they have gotten close to a Sweet 16. Now, the recruiting misses, Kayvon Allen and Malik Monk, those are two glaring recruiting misses. You got Kayvon, who maybe didn't reach his potential at Florida. You kind of wonder what would have happened if he would have came to Arkansas. And then Malik Monk, he's in the NBA. He's a good player. We'll see what he does with the Hornets. I don't know what he's going to translate to NBA-wise. So those are just kind of two things you said that kind of I don't know necessarily
well,
agree with 100%.
And here's my one retort for the 2017 Carolina game.
Okay.
If you take care of business in some other regular season games, you probably don't beat them in the second round.
Exactly.
Because you're seeded higher.
100%.
And that's an ongoing issue because we see the same problems with the team every single year, okay? It gets down. We have trouble shooting free throws, with the exception of Daryl Macon. Daryl Macon was as money could get in the clutch. We've seen Macon steal several games with his free throw shooting. But overall, as teams, the teams struggle in the clutch with free throws or with designing a play where they have to have a basket. There's problems there that have existed ever since Mike got on campus. And at first, we all believed, oh, it's personnel issue. Well, you're 8 years in, man. You've got your players running your system. You know, you shouldn't be having those same problems in year eight that you had in year one, in my opinion. But anyway, I've taken enough of your time, guys.
Thanks, Marcus.
You asked for some reasons. He gave you some reasons. And for me, Ty, it's a classic example of, I think, an argument that fans have with a lot of other teams and a lot of other sports. It's how you balance regular season success against a lack of postseason success. Yeah. And you see this with a lot of sports and a lot of teams. Right now what you have with Mike Anderson is a base of what you know you can kind of expect year after year in the regular season. Maybe that doesn't come true this year where you get to that 20, 21, 22 win area where you feel comfortable about a chance to get into the national tournament. But the regular season success has been there. And obviously the postseason success has not. And I think we as sports fans, once you have gotten to, and you're not at the top of the pyramid when you're in the field of 68, but you're in the tournament, you're in the discussion, and you feel like getting there is no longer enough. But you're making a risk, a real risk, if you want to start all over again with somebody else, and you just don't know what you will have as far as that base is concerned from the regular season. No matter who it is that comes in, you're giving up. You're giving up at some level, a level of success that you get year after year, and you don't know what you're going to get in return.
And also, can I put this in real cool? If you don't have Mike Anderson, let's say you just 100%, like the whole fan base just jumps off, which I don't think they should at this point. Again, you're not even halfway through SEC play. Who are you definitively going to get? Because that's all, let him go. Let's go get him. Let's go get... You don't know if you could get... You don't know if you could get Billy Donovan. You don't know if you get Hoiberg. You have no idea what this job would bring in as the next head coach. You have no clue as an Arkansas fan. You think you might have an idea? You have no idea.
Well, let's go to Robert in Fort Smith before we take our break. Robert, how you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
Not bad, guys, but you can, okay, I'm going to go back. I'm not a big basketball fan. I'm just listening. I do watch them some. But we always talk about stability because that's the big thing with football. But all you got to build stability. Got to build it. You have it. And if he's been there 8 years, like you said, he's getting you somewhere. But then in the postseason, he's not. And I would be like that with Van Horn because I am the baseball. He better get me a lot further than just to reach. I'm not saying World Series, but I better be getting into the Supers. And so I get where these fans are coming from. But then do you get, like you said, do you get rid of the stability or do you keep it and just get what you get? And that's, I get it, but I still see what y'all, you know, where is the basketball program if you don't have the stability?
Grass is always greener, Robert. Always.
But it's a great question, and it's a great way to bring it up, because stability does have to stand for something. And after Nolan was gone, you can't look at Arkansas basketball before Mike Anderson came back and say that the program was stable in any way at all. I mean, you had a couple of coaches that seemed that they weren't quite sure of what they were doing, and you bring a guy in, Mike Anderson, that had built a couple of the programs, and I think you can say Arkansas basketball is in a stable position somewhat. There's been a lot of players that have come and gone, though, especially in the last couple of years. And you can, hey, I mean, if you are one of the only teams in the country, how many teams in the country have no seniors? So I think that is a little bit of an issue, stability with the players that have come and gone. The coaching staff has been as stable as you can ask for. And I think that they're not just stable, but they're classy. They do their jobs, I think, in an upwards manner, and again, the regular season wins are there, so that also does provide some stability. But hey, I understand when you're talking college sports and you're in a Power 5 conference, no matter what the sport is, getting to the tournament usually is not going to be enough for fans. And I think baseball and basketball programs are in different places; they really are. And I think, you know, after what happened in Omaha last year, getting to the national tournament isn't enough for fans. And, you know, you might hear 2 years, if they don't go to Omaha, you're probably going to hear a lot of disappointment. I don't know if there'll be guys calling for Dave's job, but there'll be disappointment. You'll hear about it. And I think it's the two programs are in a much different place.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Watch blood running through Darryl Macon's veins. The Razorbacks win it 71-70.
Scotty, thanks for coming on today. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Phil, and congrats on Sportscaster of the Year again. That's big time.
Oh, well, I appreciate that very much. We hadn't even brought it up on the show yet.
And it's
so you're news breaking right here, Scotty. That's what real journalists do. And if we're talking the three of us, me, Ty, and you, you're the journalist here.
And it's his birthday, Scotty. So double.
Oh, wow.
So.
Well, how about that?
I know
they say
things happen in threes. The good things happen in threes. So the third thing would be having you on with us today, Scotty. So I appreciate the congratulations. But what do you think, Ryan? Because I just don't know what to make of Arkansas basketball. We knew it'd be a roller coaster. We knew it. You know, the 6-game winning streak, non-conference, the high point, and you've had a struggle now, really, for the past month to 5 weeks. What do you make of this team right now?
Yeah, I keep going back to, I guess it was media day. I think it was on October 1st, and I get back, or we get done talking to players, and I sit down and kind of figure out what I'm going to write, and I decide on you know, what I know and what I don't know about Arkansas entering the season. And one of the things I wrote that we don't know is where the scoring is going to come from outside of Dan. And I think at this point you're kind of in that same boat where you're wondering where the offensive production is going to come from with so many unproven college scorers. Really, you know, Isaiah Joe's had his nights, but of late, you know, I think he's 5 out of 17 in SEC play, and teams have kind of figured him out a little bit, and making him put the ball on the floor, and strength's been a factor with him. And you get kind of get up in him defensively, and when he tries to put the ball on the floor, and you kind of neutralize him. But Mason Jones has been a bright spot, and he's been a pretty solid complement to Dan as far as perimeter guys go. And you know, I knew this team had a chance to be pretty decent defensively. I knew they were going to have to be pretty solid on that end of the floor, you know, early on in the year, and they were. I think that kind of led to some of the success. But, you know, I kind of thought this might be an average offensive team at the beginning of the year with so many guys that we just didn't know. We knew they were capable of it, but it's different coming to this level of play in college. And I think we're kind of back to carrying around the question marks that we had at the beginning of the year.
How much are you putting this on a team that's young, that's not been together very much? Because, I mean, really, a lot of times they'll tell you defense is effort. I don't think anybody questions the effort defensively, but it's about communication sometimes, and teams that have been together, they know how to communicate, they know their strengths and weaknesses, and at times they've looked good defensively. But then I watched the LSU game Saturday, and wide open threes, the lanes wide open, guys are driving to the rim, having no trouble getting there. And I thought it was a good defensive team, but they just did not look like a good defensive team Saturday.
Yeah, it wasn't at all. And, you know, I subscribed to a couple of basketball analytics sites, and HoopLens, their numbers today told me that Saturday was Arkansas's worst defensive performance of the year in terms of points per possession allowed. I don't think Arkansas had given up, you know, like more than, I think, 1.1 per game, or 1.1 point per possession in over a game this year. And I think there was something like they were close to 1.2, which is really bad. You know, LSU's kind of had their way offensively. And Tremont Waters is, you know, I wrote it in that post-game thoughts column that I wrote after the game the other night. I don't know that there's another guard that Arkansas's played, you know, and recently or in the last couple of years that has kind of controlled tempo and pace the way Tremont Waters has. And he has a way of just giving Arkansas fits on the offensive end. I think that was his second double-double points, assist double-double. In three career games against Arkansas, and he had 8 assists in the game. He didn't have a double-double, so he's always given Arkansas fits, but they've got to get back to they just got to get stops. So, I mean, if you can't score, the only thing that you can do is try to prevent the other team from scoring, and Arkansas couldn't do that to kind of save his life the other day. But, yeah, some of this is just they're just a young team, and Mike has talked a lot this year about wanting to play inside out. And I think sometimes with a young team, they have a tendency to settle. And when guys haven't played just a whole lot with each other, they can kind of maybe act independently. You know, Jalen Harris has taken 7 threes the last 2 games. He's taken more threes the last 2 games than he's taken 2-point shots, which is not great, especially when you're only like a 14% three-point shooter for the year. So there's plenty of problems with this team off just. I guess the youth on this team is one of those problems.
Scotty Borderline, our guest here on Halftime. Scotty, are you surprised this team hasn't improved its free throw shooting? 322nd in college basketball, yet they continually talk about it. Are you surprised they haven't improved in that regard?
You know, sometimes I think, I don't know. That's a good question. Sometimes I just think it's mental with some of these guys. Like, I just missed the front end of a 1-1 a couple of possessions ago, and they're pressing the next time they get to the line. Sometimes, I mean, the mark of a good shooter is you can tell with a guy's a pretty solid shooter if he can knock down shots at the line, and you know we're just not seeing that with hardly anyone. Like Isaiah Joe's probably one of the most pure shooters I've seen. You know, covered him at Northside his sophomore year, and the first time I ever watched him, I knew he just had a pure shot, a feathery touch, and you know, even he's missing free throws. You know, when you can, you would normally depend on him going up and cashing into at the line, and that's not even the case now. So I think it's got to be a mental thing, and I think they're pressing a little bit, and it's not really a surprise that they haven't gotten better. I just think sometimes it's mental, and you know, if you're not a good free throw shooter, it can be kind of tough to increase your average just during the week throughout practice.
Scotty, let's talk about Joe for a sec. 11 points against Texas A&M, and then 6 versus Florida, and 5 versus LSU. Do you think as a freshman that teams are really gonna hark down on him? Do you think he's going to be able to succeed in SEC play? I know he's a shooter and everything, but it doesn't look like he has a lot of talent when it comes to off the dribble play. Do you think he's going to be able to get his scoring touch back in SEC play?
Yeah, I think part of it is just Arkansas getting back to playing at its own pace. Like a lot of most games, I guess maybe the last month plus, other teams like the opponents have been dictating pace and tempo. And when Arkansas is playing the way it wants to, Isaiah is really, really good at kind of getting lost in transition and moving without the ball. I remember, I think after he scored 34 against FIU, I asked Mike, I was like, hey, he's really good just kind of getting lost, you know, running up and down the floor just in transition. And he's good moving without the ball. And I think that really opens up some really free opportunities for him where, you know, he can kind of work himself open and get good looks. But that hasn't been the case lately, I think largely because Arkansas is not playing the style of ball that it wants to, especially offensively. I agree with you. He can, when the shot's not falling, he can look awfully one-dimensional. And when even when he's not making shots, that one dimension that he does have looks pretty shaky. But you know, he the kid's a hard worker and he's a great kid. I don't think at all that he's not going to be back in the gym working on his shot. And it wouldn't surprise me if he kind of did get his rhythm back in the next couple of games, which Arkansas is going to need that playing Tennessee and Ole Miss this week.
Well, let's get into a quick look at tomorrow. We on Wednesdays, Scotty, we play a game called Change My Mind. It's Monday, but I want you to try to change my mind on something here. Tennessee is 9-0 at home. Their one loss this year, and they've won 10 in a row. Their one loss was to Kansas. They've got five players averaging double figures. They're led by experienced ball players that have toughness along with strength, and they are blowing everybody out. Arkansas can't win tomorrow night at Thompson Bowling Coliseum. Change my mind.
Yeah, I don't think I can. Like, I'm looking at Arkansas's KenPom page right now, and Tennessee, I think KenPom's given Tennessee like a 92% chance to win, and they got them predicted to win by 15. I think it might be more than 15.
That's close. Like, that's like closer than I would have. Yeah, 8% chance to win. Jeez Louise.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be changing your mind on that one, Phil. I don't know that there's anything I could say without you accusing me of being a sunshine pumper, so I can't do that.
All right, well, he's just being honest here. You don't have to change my mind. It's just, there's been probably more times between me and Ty that we've admitted, I can't change your mind. It's just, right. Either the facts are just too much or you just don't feel like debating it. And it's, man, you would have to look at just a lot of things going right. Everything going right for Arkansas, everything going wrong for Tennessee, I think, for the Hogs to pull that up. But crazier things have happened. The SEC's kind of weird already this year.
That is true. So, Scotty, if you're Mike Anderson at this point in the season, 0-2 at home in conference and SEC play, what do you do to try and change the momentum of this basketball team?
Oh, that's a good question. I think maybe you try a lineup change. I know Desi Sills, Mike mentioned Desi Sills today. He thinks Desi's playing some pretty good ball. I think Desi, he may have had five assists. He may have had five assists the other night. I wrote about him for the last Hogs Illustrated magazine we did. Desi had, he had five assists, no turnovers against LSU the other day. So maybe you just shake things up in the lineup, whether it be the front court or the back court. I've written in the past about how I like Daniel and Reggie Chaney playing in the lineup together. That kind of depletes your front court depth off the bench, I guess, if you want to bring Adrio and Gabe off the bench to replace those two guys. But I like Reggie and Dan in a lineup together. And maybe it is time that, you just maybe a change of scenery. Maybe you put Isaiah Joe on the bench in favor of Desi Sills, and you play with Jalen Harris, Desi, and Mason, who's your best guard right now. Maybe just try to shake things up and just see if a change could alter things for the better. But I mean, that would be. Probably the direction I would go in right now.
I mean, you go back to Mike Anderson's team when his last year at Missouri, and I know Frank Cate took over that team that was number two seed heading the NCAA tournament, but he ran basically four guards and a big man in Ricardo Ratcliffe. So I wonder if that is the wise man. I agree with what you're saying. Like, that hurts your front court depth, like how many guys you can play in those minutes. Yeah, that's an interesting conundrum that Mike Anderson kind of has to figure out, because I think I'm with you, Scott. I think you have to have a lineup change at this point, because right now you're just not getting it done.
Yeah, I think me and Jimmy Carter have talked about this, and he brought up the point, maybe you do go four guards and you play Jalen and Desi and Isaiah and Mason around Dan. That way, I mean, there's speed all over the floor. Maybe you can get, like, the rebounding department might take a big hit, because I mean, if you do go with that four guard lineup around Dan, your tallest guy outside of Dan is at 6'5", and that hurts you a little bit with the size. But I think if you play with four guards and a big that can run, that might be able to get the tempo back to your liking. So I don't know. We may see that, but that's just me. I'm just the sports writer. I'm not the coach.
Yeah, because Kim English was 6'6", and he was playing the four position for Missouri, and they had Phil Pressey, Michael Dixon Jr., and I can't remember who the three guard was, but I mean, that lineup worked. It'd be interesting to see if it worked with Arkansas, Phil.
Yeah, Scotty, we've got to leave it there. It's good stuff. Let's do it again probably next week, and hopefully a better update. Maybe an upset win sometime this week.
Yeah, it sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.